for tuning in. We appreciate it very much. Hope you stick around. You know how normally this program is very lighthearted and uplifting? Well, I don't have anything lighthearted and uplifting tonight. As a matter of fact, what we have is kind of depressing. I spent a lot of time reading the Sunday Times yesterday, which I normally don't spend a lot of time doing. I usually go for the Week in Review and the Sunday Style section and review of books and then the first section. But I spent a lot of time with the New York Times yesterday and found some really creepy stuff. So tonight's program is not going to be the sweet, joyful, uplifting, happy program it usually is. We have a couple of program notes I want to get out of the way first. This Friday, I will be in Seattle for the gig Saturday night. So Friday night on this program will be a rebroadcast, as will Monday coming be a rebroadcast a week from tonight. So that doesn't mean I don't want you to tune in. Please tune in. And also, we have an announcement later on this week of a, we mentioned it last week, not programming changes. No, we're not quitting. No, I told you before, nobody can fire us. We're going to make some changes. I mean, you know, stations can drop us, but nobody can fire us. We're going to make some changes in, well, I'll tell you about it later this week. When are we going to let people know? Wednesday? Wednesday? Okay, Wednesday will do it. I normally don't quote Stephen Hawking on this program. I think I have in the history of this program maybe twice. But something here that he has posted at one of the websites, and I didn't write down the website. To wit, I believe that the long-term future of the human race must be in space. It will be difficult enough to avoid disaster on planet Earth in the next 100 years, let alone the next 1,000 or million. The human race shouldn't have all its eggs in one basket or on one planet. Let's hope we can avoid dropping the basket until we've spread the load. I see great dangers for the human race. There have been a number of times in the past when its survival has been a question of touch and go. The Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962 was one of these. The frequency of such occasions is likely to increase in the future. We shall need great care and judgment to negotiate them all successfully, but I'm an optimist. If we can avoid disaster for the next 2 centuries, our species should be safe as we spread into space. If we are the only intelligent beings in the galaxy, we should make sure we survive and continue. But we are entering an increasingly dangerous period of our history. Our population and our use of the finite resources of planet Earth are growing exponentially, along with our technical ability to change the environment for good or ill. But our genetic code still carries the selfish and aggressive instincts that were of survival advantage in the past. It will be difficult enough to avoid disaster in the next 100 years. Our only chance of long-term survival is not to remain inward-looking on planet Earth, but to spread out into space. We have made remarkable progress in the last 100 years, but if we want to continue beyond the next 100, our future is in space. That's why I'm in favor of manned, or should I say personed, spaceflight. Okay, Stephen. Well, just as you don't need to be a weatherman to know which way the wind is blowing, you also don't need to be probably one of the, if not the most brilliant mind on Earth to understand that we are heading in one direction. We truly are. I hope we pull out of it. You and I will not be here to see whether or not we do, but our grandchildren may be, perhaps. What was this chunk of Iceland that broke off over the weekend? 3 times the size of Manhattan. There's no global climate change. Remember, it snowed like hell last winter. No global climate change. This is the 65th anniversary of the bombing, the nuclear attack by the United States on Nagasaki. Dr. Steve in Seattle sent this to me, and I'm going to share it with you. Hi, Mike. My father, he should rest in peace, was a decent man who loved his family, his country, and afforded our family a way of life that I'll likely never be able to reproduce. He was a self-proclaimed atheist, but appeared to subscribe to the no atheist in foxholes mantra toward the end of his life, shortened at age 74 by cancer. He was a dentist. He put six children through college after raising us in an upscale middle-class neighborhood. We enjoyed periodic vacations, expensive sleepaway summer camps, and all in all, we had a good American upbringing. He always wanted me to be a doctor, as he wanted to be one himself, but he felt he needed to start making a living earlier, since he married young, and my oldest sibling was already on the way when he was in his second year of medical school. He said, a doctor will always have work, more or less true, and will always make a decent living. We're certainly not starving. But the kind of income I make as an internist, a general practitioner for adults, pales in comparison to the money Dad made as a dentist in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Dad always told me to treat our military veterans with dignity and respect and mention my thanks for their sacrifices. And I do thank them. I thank them for their service. But I don't tell them what I think about the service they provided. You see, my father, like most Americans of his day, believed the lie that we dropped the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki to end the war that, quote, would have cost countless more lives, end quote, had we not committed those atrocities, killing mostly innocent civilians in the process. And an article that I read today, or read today at the Huffington Post, which you've probably read by now, but I'd like to call your listeners' attention to, quoted the late Kurt Vonnegut Jr., one of my dad's and my favorite authors, when Vonnegut said that, quote, the nastiest act by this country after human slavery was the bombing of Nagasaki, end quote. I couldn't agree more. The article is one that most Americans, particularly of my father's generation, never knew about and is worth a read, as in the book that it's referring to. If there is a God, and I like to believe there is, I can't see how he has an active hand in this world and allows for humans to do the most abominable things to each other. The article is at Huffington Post. Happy Nagasaki Day, Mike. May the memory of those poor murdered souls and the way they lost their lives somehow be a blessing to us all. Steve in Seattle. Steve is an MD. He's an internist who practices in Seattle. Yes.
And I think Vonnegut's seminal work, well, I think it was a seminal work, Slaughterhouse Five, was all about the firebombing of Dresden.
Right.
You know, so he's big into aftermaths of bombings, so he knows.
Yeah, the firebombing of Dresden and the execution of, remember the character that picked up the little doll that had somehow made it through the firebombing. And put it in his pocket, and the German military saw him. A couple of soldiers saw him and immediately pulled him over and executed him in front of Billy Pilgrim. And that's one of the reasons Billy Pilgrim, the central character in Slaughterhouse-Five, was cut loose in time.
Unstuck.
Unstuck in time, that's right.
And so on.
But Wild Hog, what was her first name?
Montana Wild Hog.
Montana Wild Hog.
Big Hoggett fan.
Oh, my God. You know, to live on Trollfamador with Montana Wild Hog could be worse things. Could have been a Nagasaki 65 years ago today.
I know the miles behind them are full of holes. Trusted with their hands at the controls. Their eyesight is twisted by the glory of their careers. The heat parade of flattery is music to their ears. As you listen to them talk about how it has a time, and yes, I play it. Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Russian roulette. Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Russian roulette.
Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. Boom, boom.
that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
And you talk that talk. You knocked me out.
21 past the hour.
Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang.
This is interesting. Joe Walsh, I'll give his whole name. His website is individualsforjustice.org. But Joe sent this in also. We're starting with a couple of emails here. I hope you will think that's a wonderful idea. Joe writes, a few days ago I attended a meeting or gathering of some good people who were trying to reestablish an old concept of trying to live in peace. The task was to visualize a place in the future that was at peace and what it would look like. Noble idea, but, and a big but here, it is not possible for an activist to see peace without also seeing the struggle to get there. There was this moment when, in our group that was asked to deal with justice, half the room got up and left. The conversation was dealing with the occupation of Palestine, and half of the peacemakers in the room wanted no part of this question. They wanted to see a place of peace, not destruction and chaos. They wanted to see a light at the end of the tunnel, not a light from a Black Hawk helicopter killing women and children. They needed to see what the facilitator promised would be a path to nirvana. This was a curious moment for me to watch. It reminded me of one reason why we have failed to stop the wars and occupations around the world. The word empire was not even mentioned in a meeting that wanted to look for peace. The fact that we were meeting in a church was not lost on me. How can you say the F word in a church without looking rude? Activists and peacemakers should consider not meeting in places that have a long history of violence to talk about nonviolence. You should meet in a place that enhances the open exchange of ideas. A Christian church is not a place for this. Too dogmatic, too much baggage. The people who came to ensure the real story of what is happening in Gaza and the Middle East got their say, and that was good. But the night for me was also sad. Here were good people trying to work for peace, being led and directed by people who are sure they have the answers. And always make me nervous. That always makes me nervous. The question for me remains, can activists and peacemakers make room for each other and work to bring about a more just and peaceful world? Maybe the first step would be to acknowledge the difference between the peacemaker and the activist. The activist is like the person who will go up that ladder to win the battle for the castle. The peacemaker is like the person who will conclude the negotiations for the end of hostilities. Both must be present, but are very different in what they do. The second step? I don't have a clue. Joe Walsh, individualsforjustice.org. Interesting, the reference to the bloody history of the of religion, the church, especially in light of what happened to the social workers who were captured in Afghanistan and executed. The bodies of whom were found over the weekend. Six Christian missionaries, they made no claim to being missionaries, but in fact, their identification was healthcare workers, medical workers, as they were. But they were taken, 10 of them, 6 are Americans and 4, I believe, were British. They were taken off the road on which they were traveling into a wooded area, robbed, and then summarily executed, one after the other. By a group of religionists. And Stephen Pizzo had something very quick to say about that, which I will share with you when we come back. but we're not ready to go anywhere. Not yet. I looked at the clock, Ron. What Pizzo wrote is under the heading that the history of religion is riddled with bodies, murder, and death. You know, which is a theme, and I know that I really, really piss off a lot of people who listen to this program who like to consider themselves to be independent progressives or whatever, but still maintain a belief in a supernatural being and mostly the doctrines of Judaism or Christianity. And I know that it is, especially to the Christians, it's very irritating that I'm constantly harping on this. But I truly do believe, in the very bottom of my heart, that most of the world's murder and death and mayhem has had a religious underpinning to what caused it. I can't escape that. Now, somebody will send me an email that says, what about Stalin? He was an atheist. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Everybody that has written, but yeah, I'm real familiar that Kurt Vonnegut served the United States military and was a prisoner of war and held in Dresden in Schlossenhaus Thieren, hence the name. So thank you. I appreciate the reminder. Okay. Stephen Pizzo wrote this at BuzzFlash yesterday. Posted yesterday. He writes, so we gathered this Sunday to learn that six Christian missionary eye doctors were summarily executed in Afghanistan. They were on a mission to treat poor rural Afghan villagers. They were killed by Islamic radicals who were offended that the group had Bibles with them, figuring they were trying to poach their Islamic flock. Meanwhile, radical Zionists in Israel continue using Old Testament title reports to justify stealing land from Palestinians, some Muslim, some Christians, and in return, Palestinians, some Muslim, some Christian, kill Jews in retaliation. Nearby, in the 12th century Islamic theme park that the mullahs in Iran are trying to maintain, a woman is about to be stoned to death. For murder? No. For cheating on her husband. Because, you see, the Muslim holy book, a book almost as old as the Christian Bible and filled with at least as much utter nonsense, commands that cheating dames be stoned to death. So one half of the sinful pair is going to get stoned, and not in a good way. What about the other half of this sinning duo? Where's he? He skipped town. In fact, he skipped the whole country, leaving her holding the bag of stones. Here in the U.S., we are not insulated from the so-called blessings of ancient superstitions. While Jews and Muslims are relative minority faiths, America is lousy with fundamentalist Christians who are, to use a British term, all about being up everyone else's nose all the time. Like fundamentalist Muslims and radical Zionist Jews, born-again Christians are all about trying to force the rest of us to get with their program, their God's program, the program dreamed up by uneducated nomadic farm folk thousands of years ago. All three major religions insist they are the only real deal, and hundreds of millions have died when they disagreed. And as you read these very words, people are dying still for the same ignorant nonsense. So, you see, George W. Bush had his whole axis of evil thing wrong. It wasn't made up of three countries, but three religions. Ah, religion. To many a blessing, to others an anachronistic curse. You guess which side I'm on. You're an Italian Catholic? You're a Eastern European Jew? You're a Oklahoma Christian? Hard to tell, Stephen. All right. The only bright spot tonight is going to be our missive from Prairie 2. The subject of his report tonight, would you like rice with your Cold War special? The USS George Washington, CVN-73, spent the weekend cruising 200 miles offshore from Da Nang, the Socialist Republic of Vietnam. What's going on, you say? Does Nike need negotiating leverage for that new sneakers plant? Officially, the G-Dub, as the ship is called, was there to commemorate the 15th anniversary of the normalization of relations between the U.S. and the Socialist Republic of Vietnam. It did, however, bring along 4 million pounds of bombs, 70 aircraft, and 6,000 men and women ready to go to war at the sound of the klaxon. Based in Japan, the G-Dub is widely believed to carry a typical deployment of 100 nuclear warheads. Japan has revealed recently that they have always turned a blind eye to this, despite official policy prohibiting nuclear weapons on their soil. Were the Vietnamese upset with this show of force just outside their territorial waters? No, in fact, they could not have been more pleased as they chose the location. This is the part of the South China Sea that they claim as their own that includes a number of small islands known as the Spratly and Paracel Islands. These islands are the reason Hanoi and Washington are getting so cozy militarily. The supercarrier task force arrived off Vietnam having just completed joint exercises with South Korea, and during the entire trip from Japan, they were shadowed by a number of Chinese warships. You see, Beijing claims absolute sovereignty over the entire South China Sea, its islands, its fishing grounds, oil and gas reserves, and the sea lanes themselves. They don't care much for trespassers, but so far have been outgunned by the U.S. Navy. Vietnam has tried very hard to cultivate relations with the U.S., especially after the collapse of their primary benefactor, the Soviet Union. Before, during, and after the U.S.-Vietnam War, the Vietnamese were at war with China and repelled several invasion attempts that killed large numbers on both sides. The third and final invasion took place in 1979, and China withdrew after taking heavy losses, but looted and laid waste to the northern part of Vietnam on the way out. China has made no secret of the fact that at some point they intend to throw the U.S. out of the South China Sea. To press home that point, they have recently announced the pending deployment of a new generation of hypersonic anti-ship missile called the Dongfeng 21D. With a large conventional or nuclear warhead and a 900-mile range, they are reportedly capable of defeating any countermeasures and intercepting a moving target. Of course, at 6,000 miles per hour, it closes the 900 miles in 9 minutes. So even at flank speed, a carrier would only move maybe 5 miles, not quite like shooting fish in a barrel, but close. Some reports are that the new missile may have a much larger or much longer range on the order of 2,000 miles. There is a debate about when the weapon will be deployable. It could be 10 years or maybe less than two. There's no question that China is capable of producing such a weapon thanks to technology sharing by American companies like Boeing and Lockheed. In order to get access to cheap manufacturing, U.S. companies are required to turn over information that prior to the Bush administration, people went to prison for giving up. In short, the greed of American corporations has made possible a new Cold War. Of course, Fox News is making the most it can from the tensions by hyping fear of the yellow peril. This allows the same defense contractors that gave China the technology to be able to sell even more hardware to the U.S. military to counter this unexpected threat. China will, of course, increase their military spending. They can afford it, and they have the factories. The right wing in this country is probably kidding itself that we can outspend China and destroy it like Reagan did to the Soviets. And that wasn't what really happened, of course. The USSR was on an irreversible downward spiral long before Reagan. Kind of like the one we are on. PrairieNumeral2.com. And regarding that, you know, I this morning, like I said, I spent some time perusing the New York Times. And was it yesterday's NYT, Krugman's column, America Goes Dark? Jesus, you know, when I saw the heading of his op-ed piece, it was like, oh no, come on, oh my God, I can't take much more of this. Especially when on the front page of today's newspaper, they're talking about cities literally going dark as a means of filling this budget gap that cities, counties, states all have. cities are turning off streetlights. Here in Metro Atlanta, an entire county dropped bus service that left 8,000 people who use the bus service without a means of transportation. I mean, just no transportation, period. Schools closing, teachers being fired or furloughed or laid off. I thought furloughed had to do, you know, my uncle who was in World War II used to get furloughed. That was the word they used back then. Uncle Kerwin has been furloughed. He's coming home. I seem to remember that. Maybe not. Maybe it was my mother saying, your Uncle Kerwin used to get furloughed. But the lights are going out. So Krugman writes, America goes dark. I'll share some of this with you when we come back. Stay with us. If you can. I mean, if you can't handle this, I understand. I understand. I really do.
Before
the hour, regarding the atheism of Joe Stalin, Uncle Joe, Irish Dave reminds me that Stalin spent quite a bit of time in seminary before he became Uncle Joe, before he became Joseph Stalin, right? As Irish Dave said, he spent just enough time in seminary to become non-religious. Krugman says that the lights are going out all over America, literally. Colorado Springs made headlines with its desperate attempt to save money by turning off a third of its streetlights. Similar things are happening across the nation, from Philly to Fresno. Meanwhile, a country that once amazed the world with its visionary investments in transportation from the Erie Canal to the interstate highway system is now in the process of unpaving itself. In a number of states, local governments are breaking up roads they can no longer afford to maintain and returning them to gravel. Why is this Kathy and I have about a 20-minute ride to take Molly to school. And we go down a well-traveled suburban two-lane road to get to her school, which is more, closer into town, more towards metro part of Atlanta. And alongside this two-lane road, there is a frequently traveled railroad track. It's pretty busy, as a matter of fact. You can figure out pretty much what's happening with the economy of this country by watching what's on those cars that the triple engines pull. I remember a year or so ago when Prairie 2 said to me about, watch the trains. They're not hauling all those shipping containers from China. Remember that? And sure enough, there's also a walking trail that runs parallel to this track for a while. And I would be out there walking and would take a look. And sure enough, the number of those huge, those big, they look like boxcars. They're really shipping containers. They diminish. So we notice that. But one of the things we also notice, there is a right-of-way. The railroad maintains a right-of-way from the track out to the two-lane highway. I'm telling you about two-lane road. And it's maybe that right-of-way, counting what the county owns and what the railroad owns, is probably 75 yards, maybe 100 yards wide. The railroad keeps its part of that right-of-way mowed. The county part of it, Kathy and I have been noticing the weeds. The weeds have been getting higher. And we're in the middle of a protracted, prolonged, probably never going to end heat wave in the South. We have had, what's it been now? In the 90s, every single day since Molly was three. That's what it feels like. So we've been, even in the middle of this horrifically dry weather, all the lawns in the area are just brown. But these weeds, of course, some of which are invasive species, I don't know how the hell they got here. I had someone tell me that. But the weeds are getting as big as small saplings. They just keep growing and growing and growing. This is like, and the reason for it is the county has no money. They can't come out and cut these weeds down. And I'm talking about miles and miles of this. When you get off this two-lane road I'm talking about onto a four-lane with a divider, it gets even worse. The county and the state are supposed to share the cutting responsibilities out there. Nothing. Nothing. The weeds are starting to creep to the point where it's starting to look like one of those science fiction. What was this thing? It was on the History Channel or the Science Channel about what happens to the Earth if human beings were to disappear. Just pew, gone. And they showed what would happen after a day, after a year, after 10 years, 20 years, 50, 100, 200, 1,000. It's very interesting to see how they presented that. That's what this is starting to look like. Because there's no money to cut the damn weeds. Well, today, after we drop Molly off for her first day of first grade, God bless her soul. Somebody bless her soul. We're coming back, and we notice they're cutting the weeds. Oh, my God. How did this happen? And right up to the road. And then we noticed it's not the county doing the cutting. It's the railroad. As what? An act of charity, I guess. What?
CSX Railroad owns that easement.
Yeah, but the county owns the right-of-way alongside the road. So, that, you know, where the county sends the workers out to pick up all the trash that the freaky rat bastards throw out of their cars. So it's you know, it's jointly owned, or not jointly owned, but the two pieces, CSX owns this and the county owns that. But the county has no money to cut the weeds. So on the one side of the road where the railroad tracks is, CSX is cutting the weeds. On the other side, the weeds continue to grow. You notice little things like that, you know, when especially you also notice that one of the counties that make up Metro Atlanta has decided to cancel public bus service. When you notice that streetlights, your friends tell you who live in town, streetlights are being, instead of every streetlight, it's every other streetlight. How did this happen? I think we know. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Computer is
I really do. The air quality here in Atlanta, the Atlanta area, has gotten so bad. We've had orange-coated days, I don't know, for days in a row. It just seems like it never ends. Where even people who do not have lung conditions are advised not to do a lot of heavy exercise outside. Well, we have a little community pool that we work out in. Kathy and I, we both swim a mile a day. So we've been trying to go there earlier and earlier before the heat of the day makes this ozone crap even worse. But the joke is on us, because it's getting to the point, no matter how early you go, it gets harder and harder to breathe. Now, it doesn't affect Kathy as much. First of all, she's considerably younger than I am. And secondly, I was a smoker for 45 years before I finally kicked the habit. And 8 years ago, if you're keeping track. And as I've said before, I'm fully aware that the damage that I did to my lungs, I have no idea. Like my friendly doctor says, you may have lung cancer. It just hasn't developed yet. So that's the risk in smoking, right? I'm not here to talk about smoking tonight, though, but I'm just saying, getting out in this air, the stuff that passes for air. Somebody said one time, I don't trust air, I can't see. Look what's happening in Moscow. Look what's happening in Russia. So, all that just to explain why I sound like hell tonight. I'm not talking about the subject matter and delivery. That always sounds like hell. I'm talking about voice quality. It's from trying to maintain exercise regimen at the same time trying to breathe. And it's getting more and more difficult here. The situation in Russia, of course, if you've been following that, you know, the interesting thing about peat bogs, once they catch fire, they can burn for decades. And it's my understanding that part of the problem in the district in which Moscow sits is that not only the forest fires that are just raging out of control, the Russians have no way of fighting forest fires. They've been too busy setting up their oligarchy and making sure that everybody in Moscow or the people in Moscow, if they want an apartment, they have to pay the equivalent of maybe $6,000-$7,000 a month for rent. So the country's gone to hell. It's the American model. It's what the oligarchs in this country are aiming for. An upper class that is extremely wealthy, that comprises maybe 5% of the population. The other 95% can go pound sand up their body orifices. So I watched this stuff on television about Russia and Moscow, and those pictures of the smoke and the smog, and the Russians just soldiering on, the Moscovites just walking down the street, some of them with their face masks on. And reports are that this stuff is seeping under the doors and under the windowsills and into the Moscow subway system, which is, I've been told, is the deepest subway system on the planet. I mean, it's very deep. It was used. I think the plan, of course, is to use it as bomb shelters when the Americans finally go crazy and attack Russia. But anyway, Krugman, after swimming mile today and noticing that it was hard to breathe, and I come home and America Goes Dark, this is from yesterday, from the 8th, and I hadn't read it yet, and he's talking about all this stuff. Like, the fact that we once prized education, that's what we were about in this country, education. The Christian crazies, the religious crazies stayed in church and you know, do their thing there. They didn't try to infect the school system, which they have now done. We were one of the first democratic societies to provide free education, basic education to all of our kids. What right-wing bastards like Neil Bortz calls government schools, government education. And now we're cutting back. Teachers are being laid off. Programs are being canceled. In Hawaii, the school year itself is being drastically shortened, and all the budgetary signs point to more of this coming. And as Krugman points out, we're told that we have no choice. That basic government services, stuff that has been provided for generations, all of a sudden, not affordable. This is the culmination of the Reagan Revolution. When Ronald Reagan came to office in 1980, the accumulated debt from 200 years of this country's existence totaled $1 trillion. When he left, it was $4 trillion. It's now at what? In real dollars, $15 trillion? $16 trillion? Who knows? Bruce Enberg might know. I damn sure don't. But this is the culmination of Reaganomics. The idea was to cut taxes to such a deep degree that the state, whether it's the local state, the federal state, the county state, the state would no longer be able to function. And this, you know, starve the beast mentality. And to this point, the Reaganites, the starve the beast type right-wing neo-Nazis, are succeeding. They're succeeding. We're told that we have no choice, that basic government functions are no longer affordable. This is what that sick bastard, what's his name? What's the guy's name that runs... you know what I'm talking about. Now, the federal government is providing a trickle of help, if trickle is the right word. It's probably less than that, because there's all of a sudden this great priority on reducing the deficit, which is hog's nut. The Republicans are talking about reducing the deficit. Well, we got to reduce the deficit. Well, why now? Why now, you rat bastards? I mean, Bill Clinton, regardless of what a snake he was, at least he handed to the Bush crime family budget surpluses as far as the eye could see. Well, it didn't take long to kill that, did it, huh? With the Bush-Cheney tax cuts for the wealthy, which are running out this year. And of course, you see the usual suspects on television now. Oh, we got to save the tax cuts. Oh, because it creates jobs. And you know what? A lot of people are going to look at that and believe it. Well, I might be rich someday, and I don't want to pay a lot of taxes. Let me tell you something, right-winger. No, you're not. You're never going to be rich. Not only that, you're going to be lucky if you can afford to pay your rent. Because you're not going to own a home either. That's gone. You stupid bastards. So Washington is not doing anything. We got to reduce the deficit. That's for the Republicans and these filthy centrist Democrats, who are not really Democrats at all. This is what they're saying. And then virtually, as Krugman points out in the next breath, they declare that we must preserve the tax cuts for the very affluent at a budget cost of $700 billion over the next decade. You realize what we are rapidly becoming. We'll be right back. And he's the one that said, my goal is to cut government in half in 25 years to get it down to the size where we can drown it in the bathtub. He was the so-called field marshal of the George Herbert Walker Bush and Ronald Reagan. You know, who gave these bastards that kind of power? How can one person say, my goal is to cut government in half in 25 years? Who is this guy? Why is he still walking the streets? I'm serious. Well, anyway, it's pretty much succeeded, hasn't he? And Michael said, yeah, the Russian or the Moscow subways are 300 feet down. I mean, that's a football field stood up on its end. And Gordon in Oklahoma City, who is also a railroad fan and model railroader, says, Mike, I expect the railway company's maintenance division is concerned that the high weeds on the public part, on the public right of way, might become a serious fire hazard. High weeds plus heat plus one cigarette equal one hell of a wildfire, which could not only immediately impede traffic on the railroad, but if wood ties are still used there, they could be damaged too. Gordon in Oklahoma City. Yeah, they are wooden ties, railroad ties. And It never occurred to me. Thanks, Gordon. That they're doing it not because they're taking pity on the county, but because they understand. I mean, this whole part, this whole northern part of the state right now is just an absolute fire hazard. But there's no global climate change whatsoever. Krugman says, in large part, in effect, a large part of our political class is showing its priorities. Given the choice between asking, I would take a gun and demand, but this is Krugman. Given the choice between asking the richest 2% or so of Americans to go back to paying the tax rates they paid during the Clinton-era boom, or allowing the nation's foundations to crumble, literally, in the case of roads, figuratively, in the case of education, our political class is choosing the latter. To hell with it. They're letting it crumble. And he goes on to say, what about the economy's future? Everything we know about economic growth says that a well-educated population and high-quality infrastructure are crucial. Emerging nations are making huge efforts to upgrade their roads, their ports, and their schools. Yet in America, we're going backward. We're going backward! How do we get to this point? It is the logical consequence of three decades of anti-government rhetoric. Rhetoric that has convinced many voters that a dollar collected in taxes is always a dollar wasted. The anti-government campaign has always been phrased in terms of opposition to waste and fraud, to checks sent to welfare queens driving Cadillacs, to vast armies of bureaucrats uselessly pushing paper around. Because, of course, those are myths. There's never remotely as much waste and fraud as the right claimed. And now that the campaign has reached fruition, we're seeing what was actually in the firing line. Services that everyone except the very rich need. Services that government must provide, or nobody will, like lighted streets, drivable roads, and decent schooling for the public as a whole. So the end result of the long campaign against government is that we've taken a disastrously wrong turn. And Krugman finishes up by saying America is now on the unlit, unpaved road to nowhere. And, you know, I'm so sick of thinking this thought. I'm so sick of considering the question of why do we continue to allow this to happen? This is the part I cannot understand. 15, 16, 18 million people unemployed or underemployed. People losing their homes. People who have lost everything. Education going into the toilet. Streetlights that can't be turned on. Services that can't be provided. Also, these goddamn wealthy 2% can get their money? What in the hell is going on? What is going on? We'll be back.
Truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
There's a shadow hanging over me. I'm not half the man I used to be.
Welcome back. 25 before the hour. Greg Patton, our newspaper writing friend in Florida, writes, Mike, Prairie 2 is correct about China developing a third generation of that supersonic cruise missile. The first and second generations of that missile, designated by NATO as the SSN-22 Sunburn and the SSN-26 Onyx, were originally developed by Russia in the early 90s as a cost-effective means of countering U.S. naval supremacy. They are specifically designed to engage U.S. carrier battle groups and can be launched from the air, land, or ships. There still is no defense against the first and second generation versions, as they travel at supersonic speeds below radar, are too fast to be intercepted by radar-guided anti-aircraft missiles, too fast to be shot down by jets from the air, and they then execute a violent pop-up maneuver at the end of their flight pattern to evade the last resort phalanx Gatling guns on U.S. ships. In several computer simulations conducted during the Bush administration, nearly the entire Fifth Fleet was sunk after attacks with these missiles. So what's the point? Well, the point is, what most people do not know is that Iran has purchased somewhere between 100 and 200 of these missiles from Russia. And they are deployed on mobile launchers on Iran's coast along the Straits of Hormuz. The only way to take out all or most of them would be with nukes. Perhaps that's why Iran hasn't been attacked yet. Right now, however, there is a huge U.S. naval armada off the coast of Iran. Russia also has deployed a fleet to the Mediterranean, reportedly armed with up to 800 of these missiles. I wonder if the right-wingers and the war cheerleaders and the media would cheer for a war with Iran if they knew what all of this means. Of course they would. They get off on death and destruction, and the cable news rating would shoot through the roof. Besides, the destruction of even one carrier would send the American public into a war frenzy, and every other problem would be forgotten. Far-fetched? Look at history and ask yourself how many other times the war was started to further an agenda and influence public opinion. Lots. Now, see, I said it was not going to be a very giggly, ha-ha program tonight like our programs usually are. Our programs, according to the right-wingers, our programs are nothing but a big joke all the time anyway. But I didn't realize that you people sending these damned emails are going to make it so bad. Don't you have anything fun to talk about? Isn't there anything nice? Tom in Joshua Tree, California, who always writes funny stuff, sends this in. Mike, Richard Dawkins says the future of the human race is in space, in reference to what Stephen Hawking said. What he and so many other ivory tower intellectuals do not understand is that we are already in space and riding on a rock called Spaceship Earth. If we cannot figure it out here, we will only take it with us. My question to all these experts is, where are you? Why are engineers not striking until our country's infrastructure is rebuilt? Why are lawyers not striking until the Patriot Acts are revoked? Why do cable news channels only confer with economic idiots and not Muhammad Yunus or Ravi Batra? Why are military leaders and generals not throwing their stars into the mud rather than force troops into pointless death to the lies those brassy tin soldiers all served. Why are doctors not going on strike until they're permitted to practice their medicine without concern for money that ought to be there for them and their patients, rather than used for killing, maiming, and torturing mostly innocent civilians whom we think dress funny and have weapons of mass destruction hidden up their butts? Why are religious leaders all silent when it comes to protests against war, against killing, against such needless and gratuitous suffering that they and their brain-dead flock impose on the world? And, well, the questions go on and on and on, but the answer is always the same. It's the same reason 70% of Americans either vote for Republicans or do not vote at all. It's just too easy to hate, too easy to kill, too easy to be stupid, too easy to enslave others. And until this fascination with stupidity and greed and all the diseases of ego are grown out of, jumping a rocket into space is not going to do anything but turn space into a floating cemetery. People do not want peace. They want death. Insist upon it. Demand it, because without it, they're left with the awesome horror of their cruel ignorance and indifference. And living a life that educates the self and serves the other is for them akin to death. And their lives depend on killing for no reason other than killing. Tom in Joshua Tree, California. Well, it kind of ties in with what Stephen Hawking said in the piece that we started the program with tonight, that I'm paraphrasing, but we do in fact still operate so much of our thought processes at Fox News, all their thought process. Anyone associated with Fox thinks this way, but so many of our thought processes come out of that primal, primeval, I should say, reptilian part of our brains that is just, let me eat everybody or kill everybody so that I can survive. Let me rape and pillage and loot and burn and destroy because I have to do that, or somebody will rape and loot and pillage and destroy me. Of course, everybody thinks that way. And until that is removed through some sort of evolution, I remember 20, 30, 40 years ago hearing the argument that we had advanced too far technologically vis-a-vis our advancement psychologically or socially. And I think they threw in the word spiritually also. And yeah, there's no question about that. There's no question. We still operate the same way that early humans operated, say, I don't know, pick a number, 20,000 years ago, and yet we have nuclear weapons and technology, and everybody hates everybody. I mean, the Kingston Trio made a song about this years ago. Remember that? They're rioting in Africa. They're starving in Spain. There's hurricanes in Florida. And Texas needs rain. You remember that, Kathy? The whole world is festering with unhappy souls. The French hate the Germans. The Germans hate the Poles. South Africans hate, South Africans hate the Dutch. And I don't like anybody very much. But we can be tranquil and thankful and proud, for man's been endowed with a mushroom-shaped cloud. And we can be certain that some lovely day someone will set the spark off, and we will all be blown away. I love that song. And that came out in the 60s. Oh, don't write me an email about how stupid my voice sounds. I know how stupid it sounds. And then on top of Nelson Schwartz writing in Saturday's Times, has a piece, Jobless and Staying That Way. You know, the new normal, as it's come to be called on Wall Street and certain branches of academia, envisions an economy in which growth is too slow to bring down the unemployment rate. The new normal. You wrote about that today, didn't you? You blogged about that. At MikeMulley.com, Kathy's blog is about the new normal. Dean Hubbard, dean at the Columbia Graduate School of Business and an economic advisor to George W. Bush, is starting to say things like, if there is a new normal, it's more about the labor market than GDP. We have to help people face a new world. That means a world without the economic benefits that were available in the 50s and 60s. And then again in the 90s, it's all over. I can't stand that. I can't stand that that stuff. We'll be right back.
The Germans hate the Poles. Italians hate Yugoslavs. South Africans hate the Dutch. And I don't like anybody very much. But we can be tranquil and thankful and proud. Poor man's been endowed with a mushroom-shaped cloud.
Your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
Bob Herbert writing last week on the New York Times, putting our brains on hold. Yeah, this is about the education situation that Obama is addressing now. We used to be the world's leader in the percentage of young people with college degrees. We have fallen to 12th among 36 developed nations. This is the other side of the Grover Norquist plan to destroy everything. You have to destroy free education if you're interested in destroying a class of people, in this case the middle class, because with education people figure out what your scam is and then they give you the finger and work around you or kill you and continue with what they know to be true, but when you what their goals are. But when there is no education, or when education becomes what it's become in this country, then the middle class, or whatever you want to call us, we start to disappear. It's not just about jobs. It's also about education. What do you know? What is your scholarship? What have you learned? Upon what are you basing these decisions? Whose word are you considering yourself informed? What books have you read? What histories? What authors have given you ideas about life? That sounds so prosaic now, doesn't it? What authors have given you ideas about life? There was a time in this country where that's where most of us got our ideas about life, was what authors did we read? But without education, and the destruction of public education was a primary goal of Grover Norquist and the right-wingers, you've got to get rid of public education. You must destroy the idea that people can rise out of the mass, out of the morass, out of the swamp with education. You've got to change it to top down. We will tell you what to believe. We will tell you how much two and two is. This is exactly what O'Brien was trying to get through to Winston Smith. You don't say 2 + 2 = 5 in order to stop the pain. You don't say 2 + 2 = 5 in order to please me, your interrogator. You don't say 2 + 2 = 5 in order to please Big Brother. You say 2 + 2 = 5 because you believe it. And how do you believe it? What set of circumstances or points have to be put into your mind in order to get you to believe it? You know, I mentioned last week the ginkgo tree behind the county courthouse over here in downtown Decatur, Georgia, with the little stone laying on the ground in front of, or embedded in the ground in front of it, pointing out the ginkgo tree is millions of years old. And it was put out there by a church ladies' aid society, or whatever the hell they're called now. And you know, Kathy, I were marveling over that. How can they say that the tree is of a species millions of years old when on Sundays and on Wednesday night when they go to prayer meeting, they exhort each other into believing that the universe is only 8,000 years old? But it's that kind of, look what's happening to education in Texas and soon to come to a state near you. Look at this surge of this garbage called creationism. This absolute anti-scientific, anti-intellectual, anti-life theory that everything is death-based. And the only way out of this death-based circumstance that humans find themselves in is to believe in God or Allah or Yahweh or the unnameable or the sky spooks or, you know, the demon haunted world that Sagan wrote about. I mean, what? And we wonder why we have fallen to 12th. The rest of the world is going, what in the hell is happening in the United States? They only say that for maybe 5 seconds, and then I get on, some of them do, with whatever their national goals are or their societal goals are. In the meantime, you and I sit here and wonder what Sarah Palin has tweeted today. All over the news here in the Atlanta Metro today, Sarah Palin is here to campaign for, what's her name? Hansen? Karen? Handel? Like the composer? I don't know. She's a former, what was she? Secretary of State or school? Karen Handel? Is it Handel? I don't know. But she's running for, she's a right winger running for governor against another right winger, a former member of Congress. And this is, I mean, this is so funny to watch these right wingers ripping each other like beasts clawing at each other's underbellies. You know, just Karen Handel, is it Handel, like in Handel's Messiah? Like, yeah. And they clawed each other. So, Sarah, she was former Secretary of State, that's right. So Karen Handel scores a coup as far as media in Atlanta is concerned. Oh, Sarah Palin is here. Is she going to walk on water? That's what we're concerned about, right? She did what? She named a kid? Kathy's getting way obtuse for me. We'll be back after the break. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. We are just filled with sweetness and light this evening as we carom from apparent life-ending catastrophe to apparent life-ending catastrophe. Oh, my goodness. Such fun times, huh? Mitch in Sycamore is responding to what Tom in California wrote about why aren't the engineers striking, why aren't the teachers doing this. Mitch in Sycamore writes, we engineers can't strike. We are almost all unemployed. While we are bringing in tens of thousands of H-1Bs, those are special immigration status of categories of engineers from other countries who will work at one-third the rate, you see, that American engineers can work. While we are bringing in tens of thousands of H-1Bs, 95% of U.S. citizen engineers are unemployed. I am an engineer, and most of my engineer friends have given up and are working minimum wage jobs or selling insurance. And in light of that, UBC writes, little news bulletin, Shanghai maglev train clocked at slightly over 311 miles an hour. It's a news item. China is investing $480 billion for the expansion of its rail to 19,000 miles and is in current negotiations eventually to offer a train from King's Cross in London to Beijing in just under 2 days. 660 kilometers an hour, essentially as fast as flying. We, on the other hand, are turning the lights out, closing libraries, laying off teachers, firemen, and cops, selling our turnpikes to consortiums of foreign-owned banks, and the Mississippi is for sale. Anyone remember George W. Bush selling or giving our ports to the United Arab Emigrants or Emirates? Yeah, when word of that got out, it got stopped, didn't it? Or did it go through quietly? Remember that? Sons of bitches. It sure is getting squally out here. This is kind of frightening. Is we might as well get all this bad stuff out tonight, and then tomorrow we'll do nothing but fun things, right, Kathy? There must be some fun topics out there, right? Aren't there? And there's some fun stuff. What are the other so-called liberals talking about on radio? Huh? When I get to Seattle this weekend, I'll have to ask the little band of brothers and sisters that will be sitting up on that stage. Yes?
Well, I think Hartman has an idea about getting reparations for gay folk for Prop 8.
In other words, all marriages conducted over the next 10 years should be billed to the Mormon Church.
Something like that. Reparations for gays. I like it.
Yeah, that has two chances. That has two chances of happening.
We're talking about happy stuff.
I can barely hear you.
We're talking about happy stuff. That's a happy thing.
Yeah, yeah. Reparations are always happy, right? Or reparations is our...
You'll be in Seattle this weekend.
Yeah, I'll ask all these people. I'm going to ask them.
People should buy tickets and go see you.
That's right. Go to am1190seattle.org. Is that it?
It'd be 1090.
1090. Yeah, well, I don't keep track of this. You keep track of this. John Senton keeps track of this. I don't know any of this.
Not 11. 10. Everybody. 1090.
AM 1090.
Yes.
Seattle.
Yeah, Progressive Talk.
.com or .org?
One of our oldest and dearest affiliates who we love dearly.
Kathy's trying to make sure they don't drop us now by saying all this. I'll be there Saturday night. There's going to be a big blowout if
the
you...
The Forum.
Huh?
At the Forum?
No, at the Shower Center.
The Shower Center. Thank you. Well, just get that out there.
So go to AM 1090's website and order your tickets. I think there's some still left.
Oh, goodness, yes.
There are?
Yeah, there's some great seats left.
Okay, well,
I think there's some crappy seats too, but there's seating still available.
Okay, well, that's this Saturday night.
We've been talking about the economy, right? You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go buy some seats.
No, you buy
we
tickets.
We love our Seattle affiliate.
Okay. Try to calm down. Get in
I'm the, punchy. I've been up since 5 in the morning. You know how early we have to get up to get our kid to first grade?
I was up with
really
you.
Early.
I was up
I know,
with you.
You were making oatmeal then, and you put the milk in the pantry and the oatmeal box
no.
in the refrigerator.
No.
Oh, it was the butter in the pantry.
Here's something else for you to worry about as you're drifting off to sleep tonight, or to think about. I don't expect people to worry about anything that you hear on this program, because all we are on this program, all this is like a funnel. There's very little original thought on the Malloy program. It's come to that point. Is the stream off? What happened? I have no idea. I'm sorry. It looks like somehow our computer has turned off the video stream. We'll get it back up. What was I saying? You don't know?
Was it important?
Probably not. Talking about getting out of the way all the really grungy topics tonight so that tomorrow night we can do all the fun and frivolous kind of stuff that is so near and dear to the hearts of the people who listen to this program. So here's one for you. This is from Crookston Liars, I think. Susie Madrak wrote this yesterday. What she's writing about is cancer patients relapsing because they can't afford deductibles on their insurance. Yeah, people who have insurance. Ms. Madrak writes about politicians. While politicians are playing games, people live with the economic fallout of the politician's cowardice. Because this was a predictable problem and the health care reform bill should have included free prescription coverage for people in situations like this. Here's what she's talking about. In 2009 and 2010, as the economic collapse shuddered across the globe, oncologists in California started noticing a troubling trend. Patients who had serious tumors under control for as long as 8 years, showing back up at the clinic, at the clinics with massive cancer regrowth. In retrospect, the downturn in fortunes should have been predictable. The economic recession had forced the patients to discontinue life-extending medication. According to Dr. Katie Kelly, co-author of a letter to the editor in the August 5th issue of the New England Journal of Medicine, which describes the cases, Kelly said, quote, in these cases, the patients developed new symptoms and came in after having missed an appointment or two without us knowing that they had stopped taking their drug. And there have been other such cases, both at the University of California, San Francisco, and around the nation, either of patients stopping medications altogether or rationing in the hope of making precious supplies last longer. Senior policy director of the American Cancer Society said, quote, certainly we've seen an increase in affordability concerns. Very definitely we've seen an upward trend in the last couple of years of people struggling with deductibles and cost sharing. End quote. You got that? A lot of people have insurance. They simply can't afford the deductibles. And that's what's going to happen when the new health care reform bill kicks in, too. And you know what would have fixed all this? Medicare for all. Very simply, kaboom. We'll be back. I got the video back up and the bumpers don't work. This is great, man. If you were watching the Ustream and everything went blank, we're back. You know, what can I tell you? In Hawaii, they are now furloughing school children. Yeah. Schools closed across the state. Oh, well. You know, what can you do about it? We have no leadership. We have nobody in the White House, the Senate, or the House, or in either political party who is providing the kind of leadership that this country desperately needs. And, you know, we can sit around and bitch about that until they're giving drinks of ice water in hell, and it won't do any good. It just is the way it is. That's what our political class, that is now a wholly owned subsidiary of capitalism, of corporate America, this is what they have decided to do. There will be no leadership. They will play their stupid damn games when it comes election time. The elections, for the most part, are now predetermined by the software that is proprietary. And nobody can see it because it's none of our business. Obama was in Austin, Texas today, calling for the United States to produce an additional 8 million college graduates by 2020. And how is that going to happen, our dear exalted leader? How are we going to do that? How we have... It's ridiculous. By 2020, well, that's 10 years from now. From what I read, the economists and the people who know are saying that the recession, quote, quote, has become the new normal. How are we going to afford these college educations? How's that going to happen? With 20 million, 16 million, whatever, people out of work or underemployed. We have civil engineers who are working as greeters at Walmart. How, my beloved leader, are we supposed to come up with an additional 8 million college graduates by 2020, which would be enough for the great United States to reclaim its title as the country with the highest percentage of college graduates? Yes, by God! USA! 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 What has that gotten us, huh? Obama said in the speech at Austin, over a third of America's college students, or half our minority students, don't earn a degree, even after 6 years. Do you know why, Mr. President? You're so much smarter than I am. That's because, first of all, it's difficult to work your way through college, although a lot of us did that. Or not me. I worked my way while I was in college, but I never finished. It's very mind consuming to try to do that. Those of us who used to rely on parents to pay our way through college could no longer do that because, Mr. President, there are no jobs. And the reason there are no jobs, Mr. President, is because you don't have the courage to kick the leadership of the Republican Party squarely in the nuts and go on and lead the country and get the jobs started. And you know how to do it. Never mind. He says over a third of America's college students and over half our minority students don't earn a degree even after 6 years. He went on to say, so we don't just need to open the doors of college to more Americans. We need to make sure they stick with it through graduation. That is critical. Oh, really? We need to see that they stick with it. Has anyone informed Mr. Obama what it costs to send a kid to college, even to a state university, even if you have in-state tuition? Has anyone explained to our exalted leader what it costs? And where are people supposed to get the money for that, Mr. President? He said, that's how we'll lead the global economy in this century, just like we did in the last century. Mr. President, we're not going to lead anything. Is it time for a break? It's getting close. We're not going to lead anything, Mr. President. China is going to lead, and India will be second. And if there's anything left of the European Union when they devalue their money down to squat, then they'll be in third place. And then probably Brazil will be fourth. And then maybe... We're going to lead. No, we're not. We're not going to lead the global economy. How are we going to do that, Mr. President? We don't have a manufacturing base anymore. I guess we can put half of our people to work making canned goods, and the other half will buy those canned goods or get them on food stamps. That'll work. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Conservatives, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
Nothing lasts forever but the earth and sky. It slips away.
25 before the hour. So the fires in Russia really have gotten my interest. I realize we shouldn't be talking about that. Like, who cares? You know? Come on, Mike. Fires in Russia. But it says here, Andrew Kramer writing, in this summer of extreme heat, drought, crop failures, and now a nationwide eruption of wildfires, the Russian government is facing a rare upwelling of popular anger. Blah, blah, blah. And as the acres burn and the damage mounts, the government is being tested at all levels and quite often found wanting. After decades of institutional inertia and official corruption, this sounds like the United States. Opposition figures here say the government's capacity to respond to this chaos has been severely eroded. A fact that has emerged starkly in recent days when the wildfires broke out, stoked by the hottest weather here since record keeping began more than 130 years ago. Oh, officials and the Russian news media reported that firefighters had discovered access roads to the forests were overgrown and in poor repair. Ponds intended to provide water for refilling their tanks were filled with sludge, and their fire trucks were frequently broken down. Oh my God, this sounds like Middle America. Local officials also blame a revised forest code written 4 years ago that allowed logging companies to contract out firefighting operations. Well, you know what happened there? That's like allowing Halliburton and KBR to run a war for us, right? Same thing. When the fires broke out, the contractors were woefully unprepared and inadequately equipped, said Viktor Sorokin, a deputy head of administration for the Orakhovo-Zuyevo district, about 50 miles east of Moscow. As the fire damage mounts across the country, critics have noted that Elim Pulp, a timber company half-owned by International Paper, where President Dmitry Medvedev worked as a corporate lawyer in the 1990s, this company, half owned by International Paper, had lobbied hard for the legislation easing logging regulation. My goodness! Now remember what happened when the Soviet Union collapsed. There was a rush of American right-wingers who went over and explained to the bureaucratic heads in the old Soviet system how to turn lemons into nectar from heaven. And the Russian situation from the breakup of the Soviet Union to today has just been an acceleration of this country's mess. There is, a lot of rich people in Russia, rich by any standard, but certainly rich by old Soviet Union standards. Oh, my God, they're like wealthy figures out of mythology, and the Russians know this. But in order to do that, there had to be a total collapse and destruction of regulatory policies, oversight, just like in this country. Same thing, only we got the eruption of oil in the Gulf. They got the forest fires that they cannot defeat now. Isn't that funny? You know, I think people over a certain age, that would include me, understand that the Soviet Union and now Russia had more in common with the United States, now becoming the Federation of States, than we had as differences. And I think that's one of the reasons that the Cuban Missile Crisis didn't result in thermonuclear war and the end of the human species as we know it. It was simply because Khrushchev and Kennedy, or their minions anyway, sat there and said, wait a minute. What the hell is going on here? We're all on the same team. We're all on the same team. It's just that the U.S. team has more of the material goodies than the Soviet team, but we'll get there. But what are we doing coming up to the brink of nuclear warfare? This is insane. So they back down. Now, ostensibly, at least for public consumption, the Russians gave up their nuclear missile bases in Cuba, and we gave up some of ours in Turkey. Ooh, everything's fine. But I think anyone who was around during that time and understood the gut-convulsing fear finally came to realize that the United States and the Soviet Union had more in common than we had as differences. It's just that in order to work out all those, or to find that commonality, an awful lot of people had to die on the planet. Millions and millions and millions of people had to die. I'm not talking about World War II. I'm talking about post-World War II, during the Great Cold War, you know, which started with the nuking of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, right? You have to show those Ruskies. Hey, watch this. You want to see something? You want to see something cool? Watch this, commies! Eh? Boom. And it took them a while to catch up, didn't it? But I see those the video coming out of Russia. And, you know, once you get outside of Moscow and St. Petersburg and a couple other big cities, forget about it. You might as well still be in the Soviet era. I'd love to travel in Russia. I know several people who have, and when they come back, they just, you know, you say, how was your trip? And their mouths kind of open, and they just go, I'd love to go there. Wouldn't it have been great to have lived in the glory days? Great if you're a romantic Russian writer. But I'm thinking about Dr. Zhivago. Right? Remember that? The book was great, but the movie, oh my God, what a movie. But of course it ended very badly, didn't it? all that collectivist nonsense. They just went about it the wrong way. We have collectivism here, too, only here it's in the name of the corporations. There it was supposed to... What am I talking about? My God, well, never mind. I'm sorry. Just start tripping here. I got to stay off the drugs this late at night. Just start tripping. But the fires over there. And to see that kind of smoke in Moscow. And then to read the stats. Hottest summer. You know, when they talked about Muscovites are not used to temperatures in the 90s. Well, duh, that's true. How far are they from the Arctic Circle, for God's sake? No, don't look it up and tell me. But to see all that smoke and the heat and the people in Moscow, how big is that city now? 12 million? 10 million? And then the video, such as it is from out in the countryside, where the fires are. And the really scary part is when they start talking about the peat bogs with all that accumulated carbon and methane, or as the Brits say, methane. Hasn't that been one of the fears that the tundra would, I guess there's a difference between peat bog and tundra, but if the tundra melts from global warming, which it is starting to, then the methane that's released is an accelerant, well, not necessarily an accelerant, it just increases the effect of global warming exponentially over that of stupid little CO2. But the peat bogs, when they burn, when they start to burn, of course, they burn down. And, you know, it gets down in there, so I've come to understand. The flames and the fire gets down in there. And then it'll burn for decades. If, I don't know, I think there's a couple places somewhere in Europe where they've had fires that have lasted for a couple hundred years. Am I just imagining that? Is that something out of a fairy tale, or is that real? I think it's real. Let's take a break, and we'll come back and finish this depressing program up for this evening. Stick around. Just a few minutes to go, and then you all can go home. Are getting close to the trees that hold the nuclear residue of the Chernobyl nuclear explosion. Peace. really? Mark writes, Gorbachev wasn't stupid. He moved to California, where the firefighters are still union. And going back to the engineers that don't organize, we got the email that said, well, we're unemployed. Tom writes back in, Mike, to reframe the question, I'm sincere as a layperson. I wonder why, instead of being unemployed, engineers don't re-engineer themselves into some sort of manufacturing collective and produce super state-of-the-art innovations that would bring about the economic, technical, cultural, and most importantly, the environmental changes necessary to survive. For example, hydroponic stores seem to carry only products made in China. The same for computers and everything else. We need leadership and examples, and our corrupt government will not, cannot do it. It's up to us. Any other ideas? Tom. Well, I kind of understood what you meant, but it was good to hear from the engineer himself. But yeah, okay, that makes sense. And Ellen writes in, another reason why kids don't finish college in 6 years is that the colleges keep laying off teachers. She writes, lost track of how many classes my kid in the California State University system enrolled in and then found that the class had been dropped because the teacher was laid off. Or the school decided to provide only one offering of the class, and the overflow had to wait until the following year. Even in classes that were pre-registration for everything else, prerequisites for everything else in the field. Or the class was already full when his class, and by the way, he's not a freshman, was first allowed to log on to the enrollment system. That was one of the situations that my son Chris had. His wife finished law school while he is still trying to get through. Well, not trying to get through. He's doing great. He's on the dean's list. He's working through nursing school. But everything had to be taken in sequence. And if a class wasn't available, then what do? If you get out of sequence, well, Kathy's found this out, you get out of sequence if you're pursuing a degree in nursing, a BSN in nursing, I guess even an RN. If you get out of sequence, tough. You start over again, or you wait till the next cycle. It's madness. Madness. Mike, the capitalist class is not and never was really interested in educating the working class. They were only interested in giving us the limited amount of education necessary for production during the Industrial Revolution and then for expanding their markets after World War II. But now they no longer need so many educated people here in the U.S. since many jobs have been outsourced to lower wage parts of the world. So they are satisfied to have a limited amount of people who will be educated, especially in higher education. And there's more here from Mary. But that's true. There is no point for there's no point. As a matter of fact, it's dangerous when you are running an oligarchy or a capitalist form of oppression. Repression. There is no reason to educate the masses. As a matter of fact, it's dangerous because once educated, they're liable to do something like take seriously what a constitution says, or take seriously what they learn as their mind expands, right? And the ruling class is never educated in the in a liberal arts sense, in a sense of knowing things. The ruling class is always educated they are technocrats. And the Peter Principle, it was written back in the 80s, where a person rises to his or her level of incompetence and then stays there and clogs up the upward flow. You know, they talk about this country being run as a meritocracy. Oh, hog snot. Hog snot. You know it's hog snot as well as I do. Well, anyway, it's been a very interesting program tonight, and I am so glad that you were able to stop by and share some of your evening in this heat and humidity. Unless you live on the Upper West Coast, I understand everybody out there has just been having a glorious summer. You know, with highs in the 70s and 80s and lows in the 50s and 60s, huh? But if you have dropped by this evening to hang out for a while, thanks. I think it was great fun. And tomorrow night we will have a much more cheerful program. Not. You know, if I weren't me, I question whether or not I would listen to this show. Would you, Kathy? Would you tune into this? You would? For the same reason that you look at a accident on the interstate, I take. Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes sense. Okay. Enough said. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.